Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Henna Khan, and explore deeper ideas of assimilation and acceptance. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 372 of the podcast with Henna Khan. Henna joined me to share Amina's Voice, her new middle grade novel about a Pakistani-American girl whose world is challenged. A face from the past tries to come between she and her best friend. A family relative comes for an extended stay, and his ideals and expectations are totally different from what Amina is accustomed to. Her safety is threatened in an incident of vandalism at her mosque, causing thousands of dollars in damage. And she struggles to overcome the performance anxiety and conflict in her uncle's interpretation of the Quran in order to find her voice for an audition. There's a lot of turmoil in Amina's life, but there's so much with which every reader will connect. I talk with Henna about my experience reading her Muslim-themed story, when so much of what was shared in the culture and experiences presented in the story differ from my own. It was world-opening. Enjoy the listen, and I can't wait for you to pick up a copy of Amina's Voice. Here is episode number 372 of the podcast with Henna Khan. Welcome to the podcast, Henna Khan. I'm glad that we get to talk on record, I should say.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm super excited that you're local. I'm super excited that our paths have crossed. That doesn't happen to me with many of the guests I have on here. It's exciting for me.
Yay, Maryland. Yay.
Yay, Maryland. Shout out to Montgomery County.
Yay!
Is that where you currently are? I don't mean to like out where you live, but
no, it's I'm in Rockville. I've always lived within the same 5 mile radius for almost my entire life.
5 mile radius?
Yes, yes, it's crazy. Wow. And I studied international affairs and like international relations. I wanted to live and work overseas. And apart from a semester abroad in Spain, I've always lived within 5 miles. So, yeah. And I've even gotten closer. Like I was 10 years ago, 5 miles out, and now I'm like 2 miles away from the home that I grew up in. So yeah.
Oh my
goodness. I'm as local as they get. Yeah.
Do your parents still live in the home you grew up in?
My mother does. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask if it goes up for sale, would you consider like being back at ground zero at your home?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. It's in really bad shape.
Oh,
but okay. It would break my heart to see it go. So I hope I hope we hold on to it in some way. Yeah. So.
Love. Look at that. Well, way to be there. I have not always lived in Ellicott City, Maryland, but I'm glad that you're close. And I'm glad that through SCBWI and through our state library conference and things like that, I keep getting to know that there are these awesome people in my backyard, because so many of us connect over social media now that, I mean, you just kind of, I don't know where people live because it's social media. They all feel close to me or very far away at the same time. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, a little both.
But I digress. You're here to talk about Amina's voice. And I'm so glad that you shared this book with me because, wow. I mean, we're going to talk about it. But I should also say that my friend Karina Allen, who does a podcast called Books Between, a middle grade podcast, she was like, wait, are you going to talk to Hannah? Because this book is so good. And then we were saying before recording, we were talking about Nerd Camp, which is going on as we're recording this. And Karina is there. And she, and I believe Kathy Burnett of the Brain Layer, we're talking or book talking Amina's voice. So you're all around the internet right now, Hannah.
I love it. It's so nice. It's been amazing to have the support of everybody around this book and to feel the love for it. So that makes me really happy. Yay. And I got to meet Karina in Chicago at ALA.
You met her in ALA. That's right. I saw a picture.
Yeah. It was really great. So, and like you said, you know, to have these people who you've known virtually and who've been, you know, amazingly supportive, and then to get to meet them in person, it's just, it's amazing. It's a very supportive and loving environment to be a part of, and really warm community. So I couldn't be happier.
I have that weird experience that I suppose other people have with me, with Karina, where people know my voice from recordings every week on the podcast. I mostly know Karina that way. And then we've talked over a voice messaging app a couple times, but I, you know, to see her out in the wild at ALA and Nerd Camp running into people, is just like, oh my word, Karina Allen's a real person. I can't wait to meet her one day.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Well, listen, other than establishing that you live in Rockville and you've been in a 5-mile radius your whole life, other than going to Spain, I'd love for you to introduce yourself to the listeners and share a little bit more about your writing. I know you've got a couple other picture books that I know of prior to Amina's voice.
Yeah. So I started writing for kids, actually doing something completely unrelated to my culture, my background. I started writing for Scholastic book clubs many years ago for some of their series. But I really wanted to write books about my culture and my background, because I felt like, you know, I never had the experience of seeing myself in any literature when I was a kid, and being a mother and, you know, wanting those books for my children and other children motivated me to write them. So I have a few picture books, that deal with, I guess themes like Ramadan. Night of the Moon is one of them that follows the month of Ramadan through this perspective of a child. That was my first Muslim themed picture book. And then Golden Domes and Silver Lanterns is a book of colors that introduce objects and shapes that are special to Muslims. And then last year I had It's Ramadan, Curious George come out, which was a really fun book to write and have exist for obvious reasons. And then, and of course, now with Amina's Voice being a middle grade novel that features, you know, my culture very, very strongly, and my religion. It's really nice to be able to explore these themes.
Wait, and with the Curious George thing, I need to, I'm sorry, I stepped on your words there. I apologize.
No, not at all.
With the Curious George book, there was an article or something, right? When I met you last year am I making that up? Were you?
No,
there was
something
special
about crazy.
The Curious George book, yeah.
Well, it just got a lot of attention from the media, I think, because it was the first mainstream character to ever include Muslims in this way. So yeah. I ended up getting this little, you know, media buzz, which my 15 minutes of fame. It was really exciting. I was on NPR and I was in the
That's
New Yorker.
The NPR
and
thing, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of attention around it. And I think, you know, it was a sweet little book, but it got a lot of attention because of, you know, the fact that it was, I think, the timing of it and the fact that it was, you know, the first time that, and people reacted to it so positively and, you know, did well. And so it got a lot of attention. So it's been exciting to see that people want books like this. You know, they're embracing diverse books and particularly books about American Muslims, which have not, you know, been very numerous in the past, and realizing that there is this need for them. And of course, with Salaam Reads existing now and Amina's Voice being the first book that they publish, you know, it's just an exciting time to see the increase in the interest, and then of course the increasing number of books that are available to fill this big gap.
You are paving the way in that way. You are part of that group of people that are, as you're saying, like being the change. You're writing the books that you wanted to see as a child that represent you and your religion and your culture. Was that when you chose to step away from the writing you were doing from Scholastic and write with that focus, was that at all like scary or liberating, or what emotions were going through your head?
Wow, that's a great question. I think all of it. I did have some fear in terms of how you know, how it was going to be received by everybody, even the Muslim community, because, you know, I had this idea that I had to try to represent everybody. And what if, you know, certain people disagreed with what I was saying, or my presentation of things, or even traditions, you know, that I was, you know, looking at it from my perspective of a Pakistani American family that was fairly, you know, moderate and even moderate toward liberal. And, you know, it was just a different one perspective that's not at all representative of all Muslims in America or around the world. So there was that fear that, you know, someone was going to object to something. And then in terms of, you know, just the larger world, like how would people react to this book or feel about it, or would they value it or not, and all those types of feelings. But at the same time, you know, just, I think very quickly, I got love and support for it, and, you know, positive reviews and teachers and librarians coming up and telling me how much it meant to them and how much they learned from them and how important it was. So I think, you know, very quickly I realized that it was something that was, you know, going to be welcomed, and it made me just very excited to be able to do it. And so proud of the publishers who were taking, you know, this big step at, you know, it was Chronicle Books that published Night of the Moon and then Golden Domes and Silver Lanterns. And for them to do that at a time when there was very, very little being published, I thought was very brave of them, and, you know, an important step.
I agree. And you as well become a resource to librarians and teachers and those of us that are trying to bring books into our classroom, mm-hmm. because of not knowing what books to buy and what books represent the Muslim American experience the right way. I feel that's something that's very difficult for me. I'm constantly trying as a librarian to buy books that reflect the cultures represented in the population of my students, mm-hmm. which is a hard thing to do, right? But harder still when some of these books are being published by very small publishers that might not be reviewed in trade journals. So the access, I should say, becomes very difficult. Then there are these barriers up for some librarians that in some cases we are restricted to only buying books that have professional reviews, mm-hmm. or that have multiple reviews. So when you brought up about the publishers taking that chance, I think is the words you used, or being brave, I think is the word you used, on mm-hmm. these books. No kidding. These are publishers with great distribution. But how cool, though, that Simon & Schuster has this imprint, right, is the word to use.
Yeah.
Salaam Reads, that you are, that Amina's story is the first one. There were two books published, I think, are there two books out now?
The third just came out. Yeah, okay. So Amina's Voice was the first. It came out in the middle of March. And then a couple of weeks later, the second middle grade book that they published came out. And then recently there was a young adult novel. So they're going to do everything from picture book to young adult. So I think the picture books will be out later this year. So they're going to do the whole gamut. And I'm actually working on a chapter book series, an illustrated chapter book series for them right now.
Hey,
which will come out next summer. So yeah, I'm excited about that too. And they're really trying to be representative of the diversity that does exist within the Muslim community. So, you know, obviously like the Pakistani American experience being just one of many. So, you know, they'll have hopefully representation from a wide variety of Muslims.
That's awesome. And then for, you know, I feel like the way it trickles out in so many different ways, to school visits and to trying to, because again, like, I know that it is a value for schools and libraries to try to bring out those authors and illustrators that do represent their population well or reflect their population well, and to have a publisher like this being able to amplify those mm-hmm. voices. It's cool. I didn't realize that they were, I mean, clearly I didn't look in enough to what Salaam Reads has been doing, but to know from you that even the future plans are going in such a wide range of readers is exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. And it's all very new. So, I mean, so there's a lot to come, but it's just starting. So it's very exciting.
Again, you're like on the front of this change. I hope that it continues, the sea change continues to happen in a beautiful way. But I digress. We've been talking for some time and we keep mentioning this book of yours, Amina's Voice. And yet I'm the only one and you're the only one and perhaps a couple of people listening that even know what we're talking about. So would you mind, Hannah, doing perhaps a little book talk on Amina's voice, and then I want to jump in and ask you a million billion questions.
Sure. So, well, Amina's voice is about a sixth grader, a 12-year-old girl who's living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and that's where she was born and raised, to Pakistani immigrant parents. And she's dealing with typical middle grade challenges of navigating a new school and her changing friendships. Her best friend is a Korean American girl who's talking about changing her name to something that sounds more American when she and her family become American citizens in the months to come. And Amina's a bit bewildered by that and confused about what that means about, you know, with regards to their friendship. She's also confronted with another girl named Emily, who was never a good friend to her and Soojin, her friend coming around and Soojin suddenly being nice to her. So very, very relatable middle school challenges of where do I fit in? Who are my real friends? And at the same time, it's a glimpse into her family and the challenges that her family faces that are still, I think, somewhat relatable with her older brother becoming a teenager, a freshman in high school, and causing a little tension at home, a relative visiting from overseas, her uncle, who her parents are very determined to impress, you know, things like that. but the ultimate challenge for Amina really lies in her confidence and really having this beautiful singing voice that she's afraid to let show, and her incredible stage fright that cripples her. And she, you know, she wants to let her talent shine, but she's afraid to do it. So, I think really more than anything, it's a story of friendship and, you know, finding your voice, you know, in today's world and of course balancing, her culture with the world that she lives in.
Yeah. I think you've done such a beautiful job writing this story. I was saying that there were so many parts in this story that I was really moved by and challenged by, because so much of it was showing me a different culture than I was raised in. But more importantly, it was showing for me what might be the home life of some of my students, and that was something that was really cool for me. I was saying to you, I'm just going to out myself because I don't know how else to get to it. Mm-hmm. That I felt like when I was reading Amina's voice, I was, my senses, I had like spidey senses on because there were so many new words for me and so many new things going on that, I was finding that I was like grasping at all the different ways that I could connect to the story and realizing that just so much of it was new to me. And I found that that allowed, so much learning to happen. And the experience I had, I just felt like it really filled me with love, to sound really cheesy, I suppose, now that it's coming out of my mouth, but
I love that.
No, it was great. It was really beautiful. I feel like the way that this book sort of washed over me was really cool. I mean, even just to go back to what's going on with Soojin and how important it is that these two girls, that Amina and Soojin, they say in the beginning about, you know, that relationship was so special, not only because these girls were of different cultures than most of the people that were attending the school, but also because they had these unique names, and mm-hmm. how it was like special because no one could pronounce either of their names.
Yeah.
And here Soojin is considering a name that just feels, I think, to Amina, like it's giving up part of what sets her apart.
Yeah. And that's something, as a child, when you're faced with something like that, and this is actually rooted in something that happened to me. So a lot of people ask me if, you know, the story is purely fictional or not, and it is fiction, but this experience was something I lifted directly from my life. And I remember that sense of betrayal almost, that, you know, but this is our thing, you know, this is the thing that bonds us, one of the many things, but, you know, something in particular that bonds us. And, you know, and you're too young maybe to understand, you know, the deeper ideas of identity and assimilation and et cetera, but you can feel them very acutely even at that age. So Amina feels that, you know, her friend perhaps is rejecting her as she's considering this new name and, you know, maybe becoming someone else, which is a big fear, you know, that we all have, that our friends are going to change and leave us in some way, you know, at any age, but especially I think in middle school.
Right. And so hard also when it comes from, you know, Emily being this character that we see is revealed to have been a person that really instigated a lot of this pain to Amina in her childhood, that she was the one that was like making fun of her and and causing a lot of this teasing, or she was part of the peer group that was doing that, and then to have her be part of their group, and whether or not you can let that go when someone attacks you, when someone attacks your identity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were a lot of things there that I was like, I didn't go through a name or culture thing, but there are so many childhood things that were like flagging up as I was reading this.
Oh, good. Yeah. I mean, not good that you had to deal with those things, but that's what I really hoped for when I was writing this book. I was like, I want a character who anybody could relate to, you know, from any background, and to hear that you did too. Relate to this 12-year-old girl.
That's what I was just going to say. Yes, the 36-year-old man was relating to a 12-year-old girl. I have no shame in admitting that.
That makes me really happy, because I do feel like it's the human experience that we all have, and those feelings, you know, I think anybody can have, and that's what I was hoping for, that by creating a character that people could identify with on multiple levels, that had nothing to do with, you know, her religion or her culture or anything like that, that all those things would just become, you know, they're part of who she is. And then as a reader, you learn about those things, and you get this window into a Pakistani American family or into a mosque community or things like that. And you can just absorb those experiences and details as part of her, this character who you like, and hopefully, you know, just see her world through her eyes.
Yeah. In this really beautiful way, it was actually, just to go really personal, we live in sort of this little cul-de-sac of four families, and one of the families is from India and has a 12-year-old girl that we have seen grow up from, I think, second grade or something. And I was talking to Mary, and I've been showing her this book because it takes me a long time to read books. So she's been seeing me outside with my kids reading it on and off for some time, and I think the cover immediately attracted her over as well. But there have been times when I've had to ask Mary, am I saying this the right way? and often she would correct me, and then I would immediately go wrong in my head again, going like, what did you say it was? but she as well, there have been opportunities there to have conversations. We've talked about Ramadan before. We've talked about different things. She's involved in a dance organization through some center that I don't want to try to even guess at the name of. But it's just to have this neighbor grow into this, such a beautiful young woman, and have the opportunity for her to be teaching me things about her culture and just about what life is like. Also, she almost strictly reads nonfiction. So I keep saying, like, you should read this book with me and we can have a book club. And she's like,
oh, yay.
Well, I could try it, but I mean, I mostly read nonfiction. That's amazing.
That's great.
It's just, I don't know. There's just been, again, I have to say, as much as, well, who knows what audience any book is ever written for, but as this 36-year-old man, I'm having this experience of, wow, right now it feels like this story was written for me. It feels like this is the story I'm supposed to be reading. So I thank you for the way that you are inviting all readers into this experience, both for Muslim American children to perhaps see themselves in your story, and then also for people that are not, to have a chance to, in some small way, understand a different way of life from theirs.
Oh, thank you. I hope so. I really hope so. And it feels like they, you know, from what I'm gathering, I mean, so far, I hope that's been the case for people who are reading it.
Okay, so I need to talk to you about the uncle coming into town, okay? This was, like, the biggest thing for me. I could feel the pressure. Do you mind if I jump into this part of the story?
Not at all, no.
Okay, so first, how do you pronounce his name? Is it Taya John?
We say Thaya John. So Thaya John. It's really just an honorific title. So his name is not Thaya. It's, like, no. That just is, like, Uncle Dear, basically, is really what that would translate to. Yeah.
Uncle Dear is coming to town, and the brother Baba is just sort of like, listen, he's coming into town, he does things very differently, we've got to make sure we're in the right here. And it was cool to see then Amina getting nervous about what that means for Halloween,
right?
Does that mean we're not gonna be able to dress up? Does it mean we're not gonna be able to do whatever? She immediately gets nervous because it's you will be entering this Quran memorization contest.
Yeah.
But to have an experience here of a relative coming into town for the extended period of time that he's in, and seeing how it impacts the family and every aspect was something that I thought was just really, I mean, again, drawing from the experience of I have had students that have in many cases gone back to Pakistan or India for a month or several months over the summer, whenever they go, or my neighbors have had each of the husband and the wife have each welcomed their parents into town for the summer. And now Asha's mom is, or mom and dad are in town for the summer. And so to be able to watch, like, oh yeah, they're living with them for the entire summer. Yeah. I've never had the experience of my mom and dad being like, hey, we're going to come hang out for 3 months.
Yeah. And it is such a normal thing in our culture for that to happen, for somebody to come for a long time. In fact, when I was growing up, when we would have relatives come to visit, I would ask my mom, you know, how long are they staying? And it was like out of excitement, you know, like, are they staying for a week? Are they staying for a month? And my mom would say, you can't ask. And it was like this, and I never understood that until recently. I was like, oh, you never wanted me to ask because you thought it would be rude to even ask, like, when are you leaving? You know, like, you couldn't do that. But I was just like, I wanted to know, how long are you staying? Because I want you to stay. You know, as a kid, it's fun to have people in the house, usually.
Especially if they're, like, awesome relatives. Heck yeah. Invite them in. That's cool.
But we didn't even ask, you know, because it was like, you don't want to suggest that you're in any way implying that they need to leave. So yeah, it was, you know, something that I grew up, and I know a lot of people, you know, have that experience of having these relatives come and having a relative like her uncle, like Thaijan, come, who is different, was a way to introduce the idea, really, in a very simple way, like using something like Halloween or even, like, you know, the idea of music and whether or not music is something that, you know, should be focused on or not. You know, it was a way to introduce the idea that, you know, Muslims are not a monolith, that we don't all believe the same thing, that we practice our faith in very, very different ways from each other. And, you know, and of course that comes from, you know, that starts with very small things like Halloween to, you know, very, very big things. But just that idea that maybe people don't realize that there are these variations, that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think of if you didn't explore these themes.
Yeah. That was such a great way to word it. Muslims are not a monolith. I appreciate that phrasing. It makes me think too of my nephew, whose dad is from Morocco, and they're about to go back to Morocco. And the timing is neat this time around, because now he is, I think, cousins that he's about to see, I think, are now, like, sort of at that great age for boys to be playing together. They're at the, like, 9, 10, 11 age. So this is, like, they're hitting a sweet spot where they have seen each other every year or every other year. And it's I was excited for him. We just spent a vacation at the lake. And to hear Khalil talk about getting to see these names that I have no idea who they are, because that's a different part of his family. But that they're these, as you're saying, these family members that you might not ever see, but then get to spend, like, a solid amount of time with them, is not an experience I have. And it certainly is one that really makes me feel awesome for him that he gets to have that. So that's cool that you've had different, that you also were a person that looked forward to, not the, when are they going to leave, but how long are they going to stay?
Yeah. Because especially here, you know, especially oftentimes children who are, you know, the children of immigrants, and we didn't have an extended family network here. So it was such a treat to have family members visit us, you know, since most of my extended family stayed in Pakistan. So it wasn't, you know, and we grew up with surrogate cousins, you know, other children who, you know, the children of my parents' friends and the community that they created here, but it wasn't actual family. So for that reason, it was even more special for us when we were growing up and even now to have, you know, these interactions with our relatives.
Yeah. The experience of you growing up as a child, of being, I guess what I'm trying to ask is in what ways was your life paralleled in Amina's, in the way of, like, holding on to your culture, but also assimilating with the rest of the students in this, you know, diverse school in Rockville? Is that something that I assume probably your parents had a great deal of influence on, but it also sounds like you are a person that really loves your family and that in that way really loves your culture.
I do, but it was a process, you know, to be honest.
Like,
and I think for many, you know, for many kids, it was, and that was something actually I didn't focus on in this book. I didn't want Amina to have the experience that I think has been explored in a lot of books about second generation Americans like her, you know, the idea of the balancing of the cultures, but that idea of being uncomfortable with your culture or your religion or whatever it is, or usually it's culture. And, you know, being embarrassed by it or, you know, wishing that you weren't what you are, that type of thing. And you know, and I don't feel like I felt that overwhelmingly as a child. Every kid has that moment where, you know, something embarrassing happens. And she has those things, too, where you don't appreciate what's going on or what's being said about you or things like that. But overall, I really wanted to create a character who was comfortable in her skin, at, you know, as far as identity was concerned. She doesn't hate the fact that she's a Muslim or that she's, you know, Pakistani or that she's brown or what any of those things. But, you know, she has her own challenges when, you know, when it comes to confidence or friendships or, you know, dealing with other things that are more universal. But for me, I think it was definitely a process. I do remember, you know, having moments where, you know, I wished I was just like everybody else. And, you know, and that's why it was really important to me to have the friend I did, who was, you know, my Korean American friend who I was very close to. Because I felt like she could understand that idea of trying to balance everything and having parents who didn't understand everything and having to feel like you, a lot of times you have to teach your parents, you know, how to handle being a parent of a school going kid, you know, things like teacher conferences or back to school night, like things they just don't know about because they didn't go through it. So it's a lot of balancing and trying to figure it out. And there's a little bit of that in the book too, when Amina's like, "You're not, kids aren't supposed to go to back to school night with her dad."
That's right.
Like, he's like, "So what?" You know, but, and that's, you know, really typical where they just don't necessarily get it. And that's the part I think that's hard as a kid, when your parents just don't get it. And not just because they're parents and no one's parents get it, but because they're also from a completely different culture. So yeah, it was definitely a process for me, and it's fun to explore those themes, you know, in the book and to be able to relive some of them with some distance and you know, hopefully less turmoil than I had as a kid.
Oy, to relive the turmoil. How could this have played out differently or yeah. exactly the same?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I do feel like Amina's family is sort of a hybrid of, you know, families I know, families I grew up with, my own family now. You know, I do think her parents are a little bit more, they seem a bit more well-adjusted than my parents were perhaps, or, you know, some of the others. So, but yet they still, you know, there's that struggle of old world versus new world and, you know, that the traditional values and, you know, what's going on, you know, things with, you know, even freaking out about the uncle visiting, is reflective of, you know, and wanting to impress him and make sure that he thinks, you know, he approves of them is very typical. I think that whole idea very prominent in Pakistani Indian culture is, you know, what will they think? You know, what will people say is a very common expression. So, if, you know, it's important, I think. It wouldn't be authentic if I didn't include those details.
I, you know, you brought up earlier about Amina and her love of music, and I should say that she is sort of an accomplished pianist in this book. Like, mm-hmm. she knows how to play very well. Mm-hmm. And mentions, you have a line or two that mention about how when she's asked to play, like, she can just sort of pick it up and do it. She's that mm-hmm. Well practiced. But to have something like music be shut down because you don't want to disappoint or upset a relative or go against what the relative believes, or one mm-hmm. of the things that really was hitting hard for me because of some, we'll say, religious turmoil or trauma in my own upbringing, mm-hmm. The idea that potentially someone's religious beliefs could attempt to shut down your love of something like music, that you feel like, how could this possibly be bad, mm-hmm. Was something that really spoke to me. And I love that. I believe you give the line to her mom, but mentions it about her dad, whatever it was, that just, that one of the parents comforts her and says something along the lines of, like, this is the way you're expressed, this gift was given to you. And so mm-hmm. this is the way you're expressing that gratitude, mm-hmm. Was something that I felt like you were giving me permission to feel the way I was feeling. That was a really beautiful way of handling that scene, though, that turmoil there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the whole love for music really is inspired by my son. My younger son is extremely musical and like Amina, that he, as a baby, even saw, music. And I think as a younger son, my older son, in everything, like he would hear the dishwasher clanging and he would say music when he was like a little toddler. And, he doesn't sing, but his love for music was something that was something I enjoyed watching as a parent who has zero musical talent or ability. And so I wanted to include that. And it is something that, like I said, is like the Halloween thing is something that is, debated among certain groups. Like very conservative Muslims will object to music and even the playing of certain instruments and things like that. But it's, something that is such a huge part of my family's life and my own life growing up just as a listener and something that, I think is really special and beautiful. And I wanted to include that idea of it, being something that can be debated, but that doesn't mean, you have to disrespect each other and, that you can disagree on things and come to some sort of understanding and people can, figure things out, and sort of find their own way even within their faith.
Yeah. As we're moving along this conversation and I'm trying to watch our time, there's a scene that I've sort of been dancing around how to get to with you. So I'm just going to come out with it. I know you know from before we were recording that we were talking about this. There's a scene toward the end of the book that just, I think, will rock readers' worlds because of how threatening this scene is and how, as a reader, I think we reading alongside Amina will also feel threatened. I felt threatened. And that's the attack on their Islamic center, the vandalism that occurs in this book. Mm-hmm. Is that, I hate to ask this, but I just feel like because it's on my mind and I have the opportunity, I want to ask you, is mm-hmm. that anything that you've had direct experience with?
Thankfully, no.
Okay,
no.
Good.
And it's crazy now that, this book has come out to see since I wrote it, and since it even was, the offer was made and it was, accepted for publication, like in that year, how things have changed, and how much more, these things have been happening. But thankfully when I wrote it, it was really something that was a concern of mine, just seeing Islamophobia growing in this country and hearing about things and paying attention to them and knowing that, the attacks and vandalism happen with certain regularity, not, like I said, not anything like the levels we're seeing now, but it was something that happened. And we saw even in, things like the horrible attack on a Sikh temple in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is where I set this book. Unfortunately things like this do happen, but, now, when people are like this, it ends up being so unfortunately timely, that, this is something that we're seeing with much more frequency today. But, for me, it was just knowing about such things happening, knowing about, even opposition to mosques being built and, things like that, just like the growing, like the shift in the mood among a small segment, I thought, of the population at the time, but just wanting to raise that awareness and really, hopefully my goal was really to create compassion and understanding and to offer window into this community and hopefully an appreciation of what happens. I felt like there was a lot of confusion around, or there is a lot of confusion around even what happens at a mosque. People who don't have any familiarity with a mosque community or have never met an imam and hear things and wonder, what goes on in a mosque and what are people doing there? And to be able to go and see that, okay, the kids are eating pizza and learning stories about prophets and praying in congregation and having competitions and carnivals. And these, that's the normal stuff that happens at a mosque. And to be able to maybe relate to it and realize how different, how similar it is to their own religious institutions. And then of course, to be able to feel that, that connection to Amina and to feel her pain and fear when something does happen. And hopefully see an ideal response to a situation like that, which I'm happy to see is mirroring what's happening in real life, with, people coming together and really supporting communities that are facing tragedies like this. And
yes,
sadly, not just Muslims, but, Jewish centers have been attacked, and we know about Jewish cemeteries and all sorts of crazy things going on right now. But yeah, so, you know, thankfully it wasn't an experience I had personally, but I'm, you know, so sad to hear about other people who have been.
Yeah. The experience of reading about this, I can't imagine how difficult it was to write a scene to be in this place as you were writing it. I mean, the way that you give us a chance to look around. I mean, the mm-hmm. scene that sticks to me, it's been some time since I've read it, but the scene about where she's looking in and a portion had been on fire. I think it was the mosque was on fire. Mm-hmm. And they said about, you can't go in there or touch anything because the police haven't come yet. But looking around and that everything was soaking wet and was overturned and was a mess. That idea mm-hmm. that not only was there this mess, but that you still have the aftermath of a fire being stopped. Just, I don't know, that detail. Just, there was so much that was so vivid to me and really unsettling. And also a feeling that I had of, when have I ever had an experience in my life that felt like anything like this was being attacked? I just felt like it made me, I guess it just made me hurt knowing that I have lived a privileged life that hasn't had this sort of threat. And I'm grateful to have not had that threat, but it makes me hurt for my students that I know are growing up in cultures that do. It makes me much more, I think, sensitive and aware. And this book changed me. It was powerful.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot to me. It means a lot.
I want to read, Hannah. Do you mind if I read? Actually, I've marked, I folded over a dog-eared a page. Don't let people know. I dog-ear pages. We don't do that in the library, but I dog-ear my own pages. But sure. There's this one in particular quote from Amina it's toward the end of that event after the family had gone up and seen what had happened. But I just feel like to share with other people just the amount of just the weight that this character is feeling throughout this story of just everything all connecting. The way that in life everything connects and can become big pain as much as it can become big love, I felt was beautifully expressed here. At the end of at the end of chapter 21, it reads, "I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about who they were and why they were smashing things or spraying the walls. Instead, I just pray for things to go back to the way they were before. Back to before this horrible night. Back to before I wished my way out of the competition. Back to before I heard Daya John say what he did about music. And back to before I messed everything up with Su Jin and Emily. The heaviness that has settled around my heart is getting to the point where it is slowly being crushed, and I'm afraid I will never feel normal again." Mm. Yeah. It's a beautiful book, Hannah. It's a beautiful book you wrote, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, is there anything that I didn't ask you about Amina or about anything else that you would like to share?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I'm so honored that people are connecting with the story and trying to get it into the hands of readers and thinking of, you know, really, I feel like there's this sense of urgency almost among people, like to get people to read this book, which is such a huge honor. Cause I really do believe in the power of stories to change hearts and minds, and we need to understand each other better. And if this in some tiny way helps, like I would be so, so grateful. So thank you to all of you out there who I'm sure that the book lovers who are, you know, who are listening to this podcast, because it you know, it's exactly what I had hoped for.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for being here with me and for allowing me to ask you questions and to learn from you. I can't wait for the next school year to start, because it will mean we can book club this book, and it'll mean that we can have it in reading groups and kids can take time with it and connect with it and talk about it. I really can't wait. So I want to end our conversation by bringing it directly back to the students and by giving you a chance to speak directly to them. So I'll frame it this way, knowing that we are on summer break, but that this will be listened to during the school year as well. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow. Hannah, is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Sure. So when I was a kid, I spent enormous amounts of time in the library. It was something that my mom really valued, and she would take us with shopping bags that we would fill up with books. And I really miss having that time and those hours to spend just exploring the library, especially over the summer, but year round. And I just think it's such a special place where you leave rich with stories and piles of books that can just change your life. And I still, as an adult, think of the stories that I read when I was a kid, and I remember the characters and their adventures and struggles and friendships and everything about them. And I really believe that those characters help shape who I am. And in some way, they might be living in the stories that I'm writing now, sneaking in there in some way. And stories connect us all. So I hope you won't limit yourself, and you'll read what you like, but also read something new, something that takes you out of yourself. And read something over and over again, and that you'll remember it, you know, forever, because you'll make your life so much fuller that way, in ways that you don't even realize.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Emma Otegi visits to share Marti's Song for Freedom, her debut picture book. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.